Welcome back to the Jefferson Exchange. I'm Mike Green. Up next, JPR's Charlie Zimmerman offers a collection of short news features from around our region.
A program in Southern Oregon gives high school students an opportunity to get their hands dirty and learn about ecological restoration. JPR's Roman Battaglia reports, despite federal funding challenges, the program has thrived this year.
If you're down there, let's work up the tie into here.
Up in the Ashland watershed, along the White Rabbit Trail, a group of teens are hacking away at the bushes on the forest floor. They're cutting back madrone tree saplings to reduce the risk of wildfire. Stephen Rice, a high school junior from Goshen, says they're keeping these smaller saplings from encroaching on larger trees.
They're sort of a nuisance to all these other ones. And we're just cutting them back and making sure that they're little snubs. Hopefully they won't grow back.
Rice and 14 other teens are there for a summer program run by the nonprofit Lomakotsi Restoration Project. It teaches them about ecological restoration, forestry, botany, and more. Plus, they also get paid to do work out in the field. The youth program started in 2012. John Seymour is with Lomakotsi and leading the crew this year. He was there when the program originally began and says he enjoys seeing the impact they've had.
When the youth crew covered up this trail over here, built this trail, and built this bike trail too. So we love returning to the sites we've shepherded and leaving our footprint on the ground. This is the youth crew's legacy, and I'm always honored to be part of it.
Typically around 60 to 80 people apply, and 20 end up getting hired for the four-week program. But this year, only 15 people were hired. That's because federal funding freezes under the Trump administration meant Lomakotsi lost about a third of their funding for this program. Lomakotsi's Aliana Martinez-Daro says they made up the difference with increased support from the community.
We've been able to make it, you know. We've found success opening new doors, and private philanthropic partners have really stepped up. And then a lot of it is just looking at the new funding landscape and making sure that we can fit into it in the best way we know how.
The nonprofit launched a fundraiser which helped fill the gap this year. And Lomakotsi's executive director, Marco Bay, says they have gotten most of the federal funding unfrozen, and he's confident the youth program will return next year with the full support from the U.S. Forest Service. The federal funding challenges weren't the only change to the youth training program this year. Over the winter, Lomakotsi finished doing 15 years of major restoration work in the Ashland watershed. This year, the youth group is moving beyond Ashland. Seymour says the training program has expanded to look at other parts of the region.
We had the option to go up to Crater Lake. We've been down to the Klamath Dam removals. We've been out to endemics in the Kalmiopsis. So we really got to broaden our range and have learning opportunities at every step of the way. We have learned and worked and laughed, and it's been awesome.
Tavo Hansen, a junior at Ashland High School, says he's done trail maintenance like this before with his mountain bike team. He says he was always interested in going into ecological work like this, but this program cemented that goal.
It definitely added to it. I have more, like now that I'm actually with a team and we're doing things and I kind of have a lay of what to do, I definitely have I feel like more information and resources to choose a path if I didn't want to.
Seymour says a lot of the youth who participate in this program go on to do similar work as a career. But even if they don't, he says this gets them thinking about conservation.
Whether they are actively in conservation or they're voting for conservation, they're voters for the rest of their lives. They have friends, they have influence, and I think they carry this program with them for a long time into their life.
They've definitely learned more about the natural world around them. Stephen Rice says before he started, he couldn't tell the difference between two types of trees.
I came in here with some low expectations and some high expectations, and I feel that they've all been met, and like some new stuff that I've never even heard of that has been brought to light. So it's just really eye-opening for me.
These teens might be graduating from Lomakotsi's program, but in a few years, you might find them doing important wildfire prevention work in a nearby forest. I'm Roman Battaglia in Ashland.
Pets are known as man's best friend, but at a Central Oregon event, they're the main characters. OPB's Megan Cuthill has more.
The 4th of July is a patriotic day for the United States. But in Bend, a century-old tradition held on that day is petriotic.
We will start as close to 9:30 as we can.
The Bend Pet Parade draws thousands of people and animals.
So we've got four sections. We have wagons and wheels, big dogs, little dogs, and odds and ends.
Parade organizer Katie Aceto works for Bend Parks and Recreation, and she's getting everyone ready to march through downtown. Everyone is a sea of fur, wagging tails, and smiles at Harmon Park.
You got a button.
You got a button.
Anyone can participate, whether you have a dog, don't have a dog, you can bring a stuffed animal or just walk in the parade or bring your wagon or ride your bike.
Most of the pets in the parade are dogs.
That right there is a very big dog.
Dogs in tutus, dogs in funny hats.
And she has light-up sunglasses.
But not all animals are welcome. We'll get to that in a minute. The parade organizers base how things are run on a century of experience. Kelly Cannon Miller is the executive director of the Deschutes County Historical Society.
In 1924 is when we first see it show up in the newspaper. And in 1932 is when we see it become attached to 4th of July.
She knows all about how the pet parade is the largest parade of any kind in Bend and one of the oldest of its kind in the country.
The Bend Pet Parade is actually an offshoot of pet parades being a marketing gimmick.
The parade began as a way to draw potential shoppers to Bend, but over the decades, it's become a bigger, favorite event in the famously pet-friendly town.
Over the years, you name it, it's been in the pet parade.
The parade's odds and ends section is for non-dogs and their humans, like turtles, lizards, and Teddy and Furcus, the guinea pigs, held by their owners Parker and Presley Kang.
Hi. We have like a pen outside that they play in.
And odds and ends. We love our odds and ends always. The care for that kangaroo. The creativity.
Probably most surprising to see is Adeline the baby kangaroo.
She is going to be one on the 24th.
Okay, so she is a wee babe.
Spring Still, Adeline's owner, carries her in a cloth sling.
Only because we have dogs, and so if she sees a dog, she thinks it's playtime, and she would be gone.
Still has two kangaroos, a brother and sister adopted from a local petting zoo. As far as she knows, they're the first kangaroos to ever to be in the parade. And Adeline appears calm.
She's used to crowds because we do like school stuff. We take them to like memory care facilities, things like that.
The parade used to be a free-for-all with all kinds of animals. But in recent years, the rules have evolved, and not every kind of pet is allowed to participate. Quote, aggressive animals are not allowed. Neither are cats or rabbits.
Well, that's no ordinary rabbit. That's the most foul, cruel, and bad-tempered rodent you ever set eyes on. Look!
The rabbit attack in the 1975 cult classic movie Monty Python and the Holy Grail is clearly fiction for comedic effect. At the parade, organizer Aceto says risk of bodily harm isn't the main reason why rabbits and cats aren't allowed. She says those animals are too quick, hard to secure, and they rile up the dogs. Not everyone agrees with that policy.
Yes, we're fighting for Onion's rights.
Onion is Zoe Myers' cat.
He would enjoy the right to at least have the option to be in the parade.
Myers was a part of a group of self-described cat rights protesters.
Some of them are cat owners, some of them are just for the cause.
About a dozen people without their cats demonstrated at the parade, chanting, "Let them march," all in good fun.
Rabbits are also not allowed. We don't have any rabbit supporters in our group, or rabbit owners rather, but I think everybody's fighting for equal rights for all animals.
Even with good-spirited controversy, the day all comes down to one thing: how much Bendites love their pets.
There you go.
I'm Megan Cuthill reporting.
This is the Jefferson Exchange. I'm Charlie Zimmerman. Last week, President Donald Trump signed what may be his signature piece of legislation, the so-called One Big Beautiful Bill. KLCC's Rebecca Hanson-White was joined by Oregon's 4th Congressional District Representative Val Hoyle in early July to discuss how the bill will impact Oregon.
One of the topics I think a lot of our listeners are very concerned about, what Republicans are calling the One Big Beautiful Bill. Roughly one in three people are enrolled in Medicaid in your district. This bill cuts Medicaid and it adds a lot of new requirements for people. How do you think this legislation is going to impact people's access to healthcare here in your district?
Look, across the country, nonpartisan evaluations have said that around 17 million Americans will lose healthcare coverage. Now, before the Affordable Care Act, around 21% of Lane County residents were uninsured. And a lot of those people were small business owners, were farmers, were people that didn't get insurance from their jobs. These are working people. There also are new regulations on how to qualify for Medicaid. Every 6 months, you have to reapply to check and see if you're actually eligible. These bureaucratic barriers are specifically meant to make it difficult to comply so that people that actually deserve and need to be on Medicaid, they're looking for any small bureaucratic missing information on a piece of paper, and they'll just throw people off Medicaid. Why? To pay for tax cuts for millionaires and billionaires on the backs of the most vulnerable people. Also in the bill, they struck the provision that allowed for the hospital provider tax, where hospitals pay a tax, they get matching money back, and it helps fund our rural hospitals. That got taken away. I presented an amendment to bring it back. That amendment wasn't even listened to. So it's going to be devastating here in Oregon because we did expand Medicaid so much. And this allows people to access healthcare before they have to go to the emergency room.
I also wanted to talk about clean energy and Oregon's efforts to bring clean jobs. And there's been a lot of federal legislation over the last couple of years that brought that investment. What do you think this bill's impact is going to be on Oregon's efforts to address climate change?
It's going to be tremendous. Nobody can deny that climate change is real, with the flooding, with the fires, with the more extreme hurricanes and storms. It makes sense to invest in green energy. And these are jobs, and these are jobs many times in rural communities. But I know that in Oregon, we have prioritized green energy jobs, so we'll do what we can. But again, the federal government walking away from what is both economic sense and makes sense to ensure that we're addressing climate change as the crisis it is, it's just upside down.
I know one thing that did get in a big investment in this bill was ICE. I'm sure you've seen and heard the protests in front of the federal building here in Eugene. When you see what was in this bill, do you have concerns about more investment in ICE and more officers potentially?
Absolutely. I mean, there's so many egregious things about this big, ugly bill. And for me, the most troubling is the increase in the funding of ICE. ICE has a larger budget than every federal law enforcement agency and the Department of Corrections combined. And what we're seeing here, what we're seeing in Los Angeles, what we're seeing across the country, they're saying they're going after the worst of the worst. They're showing up at churches. They're showing up at schools. They're showing up to intern and deport people. They're sending people to countries they're not even from. That is not deportation. That is kidnapping. They're picking people up who are following the rules. They're talking about taking out naturalized citizens. This is not about protecting Americans. This is about making sure Black and brown people in this country do not feel safe, that immigrants do not feel safe. To say that, well, we can just ignore the Constitution because, well, these people are immigrants, or they're undocumented, or they're alleged criminals. Well, without due process, you don't know who's a criminal. And when we ignore the Constitution for one group of people, it's just a matter of time till we ignore the Constitution for everyone.
The Rogue Valley Transportation District laid off dozens of employees in June after the Trump administration restricted federal funding. As Jefferson Public Radio's Emma J. Nelson reports, the district will also have to cut services to remain operational.
Starting September 2nd, your bus route to and from work may look different if it's still active at all. Julie Brown is the general manager of RVTD. She says people don't think about how important public transportation is until they need it.
Maybe one of them loses their job, or they have an elderly parent who all of a sudden goes into a level where they no longer can drive and they need you to provide transportation. These are the people we serve.
Brown warns that service hours will be reduced unless popular routes may be rerouted or suspended. Saturday services will be suspended indefinitely. Service cuts will be presented to the RVTD Board of Directors for approval on July 23rd. I'm Emma J. Nelson, reporting.